What do I care?
I was silent. With an expression of disgust, she cut a lemon in two and squeezed the juice into a glass. Why are you having a lemonade? I asked.
Because seeing you turns my stomach.
She added water to the lemon, put in some bicarbonate of soda, drank the foamy effervescence in one gulp. Are you not well?
I'm very well.
It's not true. Have you been to the doctor?
Imagine if I'll throw away money on doctors and medicine.
Elisa knows you don't feel well?
Elisa is pregnant.
Why didn't you or she tell me anything? She didn't answer. She placed the glass on the sink with a long, tired sigh, wiped her lips with the back of her hand. I said, I'll take you to the doctor. What else do you feel?
Everything that you brought on. Because of you, a vein in my stomach ruptured.
What do you mean?
Yes, you've killed this body.
I love you very much, Mama.
Not me. You've come to stay in Naples with the children?
Yes.
And your husband's not coming?
No.
Then don't ever show up in this house again.
Ma, today it's not like it used to be. You can be a respectable person even if you leave your husband, even if you go with someone else. Why do you get so angry with me when you don't say anything about Elisa, who's pregnant and not married?
Because you're not Elisa. Did Elisa study the way you did? From Elisa, did I expect what I expected from you?
I'm doing things you should be happy about. Greco is becoming an important name. I even have a little reputation abroad.
Don't boast to me. You're nobody. What you think you are means nothing to normal people. I'm respected here not because I had you, but because I had Elisa. She didn't study. She didn't even graduate from middle school. But she's a lady. And you, who have a university degree, where did you end up? I'm just sorry for the two children.
So pretty, and they speak so well.
Didn't you think of them? With that father, they were growing up like children on television. And you, what do? You bring them to Naples?
I'm the one who brought them up, Ma, not their father. And wherever I take them, they'll still grow up like that.
You are presumptuous. Madonna, how many mistakes I made with you. I thought Lena was the presumptuous one, but it's you. Your friend bought a house for her parents. Did you do that? Your friend orders everyone around, even Michele Salata. And who do you order around? That piece of shit son of Sadatore?
At that point, she began to sing Leela's praises. Ah, how pretty Lena is, how generous. Now she's got her own business, no less. She and Enzo, they've known how to get ahead. I understood that the greatest sin she charged to me was forcing her to admit, with no way out, that I was worth less than Leela. When she said she wanted to cook something for Dede and Elsa, deliberately excluding me, I realized that it would pain her to invite me to lunch, and, taking the children, I went away bitterly. 32. Once on the Stradone, I hesitated. Wait at the gate for my father's return? Wander the streets in search of my brothers? See if my sister was home? I found a telephone booth. I called Elisa. I dragged the girls to her big apartment, from which you could see Vesuvius. My sister showed no signs yet of pregnancy, and yet I found her very changed. The simple fact of being pregnant must have made her expand suddenly, but distorting her. She was as if coarsened in her body, in her words, in her voice. She had an ashy complexion, and was so poisoned by animosity that she welcomed us reluctantly. Not for a moment did I find any trace of the affection, nor the slightly childish admiration she had always had for me. And when I mentioned our mother's health, she took an aggressive tone that I wouldn't have thought her capable of, at least with me. She exclaimed, "Lenu, the doctor said she's fine. It's her soul that suffers. Mama is very healthy. She has her health. There's nothing to treat except sorrow. If you hadn't disappointed her the way you have, she wouldn't be in this state." "What sort of nonsense is that?" She became even more rancorous. "Nonsense? I'll just tell you this. My health is worse than Mama's. And anyway, now that you're in Naples and you know more about doctors, you take care of her. Don't leave it all on my shoulders. Enough for you to give her a bit of attention and she'll be healthy again." I tried to control myself. I didn't want to quarrel. Why was she talking to me like that? Had I too changed for the worse like her? Were our good times as sisters over? Or was Elisa, the youngest of the family, the outward sign that the life of the neighborhood was even more ruinous than in the past? I told the children, who sat obediently, in silence, but disappointed that their aunt paid them not the slightest attention, that they could finish the candies from their grandmother. Then I asked my sister, "How are things with Marcello?" "Very good. How should they be? If it weren't for all the worries he's had since his mother died, we'd really be happy."
"What worries?"
"Worries, Lenu. Worries. Go think about your books. Life is something else."
"Pepe and Johnny?"
"They work. I never see them. Your fault that you never come around."
"I'll come more often now."
"Good for you. Then try to talk to your friend Lena, too."
"What's happening?"
"Nothing. But among Marcello's many worries, she's one."
"What do you mean?"
"Ask Lena, and if she answers, tell her that she'd better stay where she belongs."
I recognized the threatening reticence of the Saladas, and I realized that we would never regain our old intimacy. I told her that Lila and I had grown apart, but I had just heard from our mother that she had stopped working for Michele and had set up on her own.
Elisa muttered, "Set up on her own with our money."
"Explain."
"What is there to explain, Lenu? She twists Michele around her finger, but not my Marcello."
33. Elisa didn't invite us to lunch either. Only when she led us to the door did she seem to become aware that she had been rude, and she said to Elsa, "Come with your aunt." They disappeared for a few minutes, making Dede suffer. She clutched my hand in order not to feel neglected. When they reappeared, Elsa had a serious expression, but a cheerful gaze. My sister, who seemed worn out by being on her feet, closed the door as soon as we started down the stairs. Once we were in the street, the child showed us her aunt's secret gift, 20,000 lire. Elisa had given her money the way, when we were small, certain relatives did, who were scarcely better off than we were. But at that time, the money was only in appearance a gift for us children. We were bound to hand it over to my mother, who spent it on necessities. Elisa, too, evidently, had wanted to give the money to me rather than to Elsa, but for another purpose. With that 20,000 lire, the equivalent of 3 books in quality bindings, she meant to prove to me that Marcello loved her and she led a life of luxury. I calmed the children, who were squabbling. Elsa had to be subjected to persistent questioning in order to admit that, according to their aunt's wishes, the money should be divided. 10,000 to her and 10,000 to Dede. They were still wrangling and tugging at each other when I heard someone calling me. It was Carmen, bundled up in a blue gas station attendant smock. Distracted, I hadn't taken a detour around the gas pump. Now she was making signs of greeting, her hair curly and black, her face broad. It was hard to resist. Carmen closed the pump, wanted to take us to her house for lunch. Her husband, whom I had never met, arrived. He had gone to get the children at school. Two boys, one the same age as Elsa, the other a year younger. He turned out to be a gentle, very cordial man. He set the table, getting the children to help him. He cleared. He washed the dishes. Until that moment, I had never seen a couple of my generation get along so well, so obviously content to live together. Finally, I felt welcomed. And I saw that my daughters, too, were at ease. They ate heartily. With maternal tones, they devoted themselves to the two boys. In other words, I felt reassured. I had a couple of hours of tranquility. Then Roberto hurried out to reopen the pump, and Carmen and I were alone. She was discreet. She didn't ask about Nino, if I had moved to Naples to live with him, even though she seemed to know everything. Instead, she talked about her husband, a hard worker, and attached to the family. Lenu, she said, amid so much suffering, he and the children are the only consolation. She recalled the past, the terrible story of her father, the sacrifices of her mother and her mother's death, the period when she worked in Stefano Caracci's grocery store, and then when Ada replaced Lila and had tortured her. We even laughed a little about the time when she was Enzo's girlfriend. What nonsense, she said. She didn't mention Pasquale even once. I had to ask. But she stared at the floor, shook her head, jumped up as if to push away something she wouldn't or couldn't tell me. I'm going to call Lena, she said. If she knows we saw each other and I didn't tell her, she'll never speak to me again. Forget it. She'll be working. Come on, she's the boss now, and she does as she likes. I tried to keep her talking and asked her cautiously about the relations between Lila and the Saladas. But she was embarrassed. She answered that she didn't know much about it and went to call. I heard her announcing excitedly that my daughters and I were in her house. When she returned, she said, "She's very pleased. She'll be right over." From that moment, I began to get nervous. And yet I felt well disposed. It was comfortable in that modest, respectable house, the four children playing in the other room. The bell rang. Carmen went to the door. There was Leela's voice. 34. I didn't notice Gennaro at first, nor did I see Enzo. They became visible only after a long series of seconds in which I heard only Lila and felt an unexpected sense of guilt. Maybe it seemed wrong that it was she, yet again, who was eager to see me, while I insisted on keeping her outside of my life. Or maybe it seemed to me rude that she continued to be interested in me, while I, by my silence, by my absence, intended to signal to her that she no longer interested me. I don't know. Certainly, as she hugged me, I thought, if she doesn't attack me with spiteful talk about Nino, if she pretends not to know about his new child, if she is nice to my daughters, I'll be polite. Then we'll see. So we sat down. We hadn't seen each other since the meeting in the bar on Via Duomo. It was Lila who spoke first. She pushed Gennaro forward, a large adolescent, his face marked by acne, and immediately began to complain about his scholastic performance. She said, but in an affectionate tone, "He did well in elementary school. He did well in middle school, but this year they're failing him. He can't manage Latin and Greek." I gave the boy a pat. I consoled him. "You just have to practice, Jenna. Come to me. I'll tutor you." And impulsively, I decided to take the initiative, confronting what for me was the burning issue. I said, I moved to Naples a few days ago. Things with Nino are resolved within the limits of the possible. Everything's fine. Then, calmly, I called my daughters. And when they looked in, I explained, "Here are the children. How do you find them? See how they've grown?" There was confusion. Dede recognized Gennaro and happily pulled him after her with a seductive look, she 9 and he nearly 15. Elsa, in turn, tugged at him in order not to be outdone by her sister. I looked at them with motherly pride and was glad that Leela, meanwhile, said, "You've done well to return to Naples. One should do what one feels like doing. The girls look really well. How pretty they are." At that point, I felt relieved. Enzo, making conversation, asked me about work. I boasted a little about the success of the last book, but I immediately understood that though people in the neighborhood had heard of my first book at the time, and some had even read it, not even Enzo and Carmen or Leela knew about the second. So I circled around it in a self-mocking tone. And then I asked about their activities. I said, laughing, "I know you've gone from being workers to bosses." Leela made a face as if to disparage this and turned to Enzo, who tried to explain in simple terms. He said that computers in recent years had evolved. He said that IBM had put machines on the market that were completely different from the earlier ones. As usual, he got lost in technical details that bored me. He cited products, the System 34, the 5120, and explained that there were no longer either perforated cards or punch card machines and checkers, but a different programming language, BASIC, while the machines kept getting smaller, with less power for calculation and storage, but much less costly. In the end, I understood only that that new technology had been crucial for them. They had begun to study up and had decided that they could go out on their own. So they had started their own business, BASIC Site, in English, because otherwise they don't take you seriously. And of that business, with headquarters in the rooms of their house, hardly bosses, he, Enzo, was the majority partner and administrator. But the soul, the true soul, Enzo pointed to her with a gesture of pride, was Leela. "Look at the logo," he said. "She designed it." I examined the logo, a swirl around a vertical line. I stared at it with sudden emotion, as a further manifestation of her ungovernable mind. I wondered how many I had missed. I felt a sudden longing for the good moments of our past. Leela learned, set aside, learned. She couldn't stop. She never retreated. The 34, the 5120, BASIC, BASIC Site, the logo. "Lovely," I said. And I felt then the way I hadn't felt with my mother and my sister. They all seemed happy to have me among them again and drew me generously into their lives. Enzo, as if to demonstrate that his ideas hadn't changed in spite of prosperity, began to relate in his dry manner what he saw when he went around to the factories. People were working in terrible conditions for practically nothing, and sometimes he was ashamed at having to transform the filth of exploitation into the tidiness of programming. Leela, for her part, said that to obtain that tidiness, the bosses had been forced to show her all their dirt close up. And she spoke sarcastically about the duplicity, the tricks, the scams that were behind the facade of orderly accounts. Carmen was not to be outdone. She talked about gas. She exclaimed, "Here, too, there's shit everywhere." And only at that point she mentioned her brother, citing all the right reasons that had led him to do wrong things. She recalled the neighborhood of our childhood and adolescence. She told the story, she had never told it before, of when she and Pasquale were children, and their father listed point by point what the fascists, led by Don Achille, had done to him. The time he had been beaten up right at the entrance to the tunnel. The time they'd made him kiss the photograph of Mussolini, but he had spit on it. And if they hadn't murdered him, if he hadn't disappeared like so many comrades,
there is no history of those whom the fascists killed and then disappeared.
It was only because he had the carpentry shop and was well known in the neighborhood. And if they had removed him from the face of the earth, everyone would have noticed. So the time passed. At a certain point, there was such a strong feeling of friendship that they decided to give me real proof of it. Carmen consulted Enzo and Lila with a look. Then she said warily, "We can trust Linuccia." When she saw that they agreed, she said that they had recently seen Pasquale. He had appeared one night at Carmen's house, and she had called Lila, and Lila had hurried over with Enzo. Pasquale was well. He was clean, not a hair out of place, very well dressed. He looked like a surgeon. But they had found him sad. His ideas had remained the same, but he was incredibly sad. He had said that he would never surrender, that they would have to kill him. Before leaving, he had looked in at his nephews as they slept. He didn't even know their names. Carmen here began to cry, but silently, so that her children wouldn't come in. We said, she first of all, she more than me, more than Lila, Lila was laconic, Enzo confined himself to nodding, that we didn't like Pasquale's choices, that we felt horror at the bloody disorder of Italy and the world, but that he knew the same essential things that we knew, and even if he had committed whatever terrible acts, among those you read about in the papers, and even if we were comfortable with our lives in information technology, Latin and Greek, books, gas, we would never reject him. None of those who loved him would do so. The day ended there. There was only one last question, which I asked Lila and Enzo, because I was feeling at ease and had in mind what Elisa had said to me a little earlier. I asked, "And the Saladas?" Enzo immediately stared at the floor. Lila shrugged. She said, "The usual pieces of shit." Then she said sarcastically that Michele had gone mad. After his mother's death, he had left Gigliola. He had thrown his wife and children out of the house on Posillipo, and if they showed up there, he beat them. "The Saladas," she said, with a hint of gratification, "are finished. Imagine, Marcello goes around saying it's my fault that his brother is behaving like that." And here she narrowed her eyes, with an expression of satisfaction, as if what Marcello said were a compliment. Then she concluded, "A lot of things have changed, Lenu, since you left. You should stay with us now. Give me your phone number. We ought to see each other as much as we can. And then I want to send you Gennaro. You have to see if you can help him." She took a pen and got ready to write. I dictated the first two numbers right away. Then I got confused. I had learned the number only a few days earlier, and I couldn't remember it. When, however, it did come to mind precisely, I hesitated again. I was afraid she would come back and settle in my life. I dictated two more numbers and got the other numbers wrong on purpose. It was a good thing. Just as I was about to leave with the girls, Lila asked me in front of everyone, including Dede and Elsa, "Will you have a child with Nino?" 35. "Of course not," I responded, and laughed in embarrassment. But on the street I had to explain, to Elsa especially. Dede was grimly silent, that I would not have other children. They were my children, and that was that. And for 2 days, I had a headache. I couldn't sleep. A few deliberately placed words, and Leela had disrupted an encounter that had seemed to me pleasant. I said to myself, there's nothing to be done. She's incurable. She always knows how to complicate my existence. And I wasn't alluding only to the anxieties she had unleashed in Dede and Elsa. Leela had struck with precision a point in myself that I kept carefully hidden, and which had to do with the urge for motherhood I'd noticed for the first time 12 years ago, when I had held little Mirko in Maria Rosa's house. It had been a completely irrational impulse, a sort of command of love, which at the time had overwhelmed me. I had intuited, even then, that it was not a simple wish to have a child. I wanted a particular child, a child like Mirko, a child of Nino's. And in fact, that yearning had not been alleviated by Pietro and the conception of Dede and Elsa. Rather, it had reemerged recently when I saw Sylvia's child, and especially when Nino had told me that Eleonora was pregnant. Now, with increasing frequency, it rummaged around in me, and Leela, with her usual acute gaze, had seen it. It's her favorite game, I said to myself. She does it with Enzo, with Carmen, with Antonio, with Alfonso. She must have behaved the same way with Michele Solara, with Giliola. She pretends to be a kind and affectionate person, but then she gives you a slight nudge. She moves you a tiny bit, and she ruins you. She wants to go back to acting like that with me, and with Nino, too. She had managed to bring out into the open a secret tremor that in general I tried to ignore, as one ignores the twitching of an eyelid. For days, in the house on Via Tasso, alone and in company, I was constantly agitated by the question, will you have a child with Nino? But now, it wasn't Leela's question. I asked it of myself. 36. After that, I returned often to the neighborhood, especially when Pietro came to stay with the girls. I walked to Piazza Amedeo. I took the metro. Sometimes I stopped on the railroad bridge and looked down on the Stradone. Sometimes I just went through the tunnel and walked to the church. But more often, I went to fight with my mother, insisting that she go to a doctor, and I involved my father, Pepe, Gianni, in that battle. She was a stubborn woman. She got angry at her husband and sons as soon as they alluded to her health problems. With me, it was always the same. She cried, "Shut up! You're the one who's killing me!" And she threw me out, or locked herself in the bathroom. Leela instead had what it takes, and everyone knew it. Michele, for example, had realized it long ago. So Elise's aversion toward her was due not only to some disagreement with Marcello, but to the fact that Leela had yet again broken off from the Salatas and, after using them, had done well. Basic sight was earning her a growing reputation for innovation and for profit. It was no longer a matter of the brilliant person who, since she was a child, had had the capacity to take the disorder from your head and heart to give it back to you well organized, or, if she couldn't stand you, to confuse your ideas and leave you depressed. Now, she also embodied the possibility of learning a new job, a job that no one knew anything about but was lucrative. The business was going so well, people said, that Enzo was looking for a space for a proper office, and not the makeshift one that he had installed between the kitchen and the bedroom. But who was Enzo, clever though he might be? Only a subordinate of Leela. It was she who moved things, who made and unmade. So, to exaggerate just slightly, the situation in the neighborhood seemed in a short time to have become the following. You learned either to be like Marcello and Michele, or to be like Leela. Of course, it might be that it was my obsession, but in that phase, at least, I seemed increasingly to see her in all the people who had been or were close to her. Once, for example, I ran into Stefano Caracci, much heavier, his complexion yellowish, shabbily dressed. There was absolutely nothing left of the young shopkeeper Leela had married, least of all his money. And yet, from the little conversation we had, it seemed to me that he used many of his wife's phrases. And Ada, too, who at that point had great respect for Leela and said nice things about her because of the money she gave Stefano, seemed to imitate her gestures, maybe even her way of laughing. Relatives and friends crowded around her in search of a job, making an effort to appear suitable. Ada herself was hired out of the blue at basic sight. She was to begin by answering the telephone. Then maybe she would learn other things. Reno, too, who one bad day had quarreled with Marcello and left the supermarket, inserted himself into his sister's activity without even asking permission, boasting that he could learn in no time all there was to learn. But the most unexpected news for me, Nino told me one night he had heard it from Marisa, was that even Alfonso had ended up at basic sight. Michele Solara, who continued to act in a crazy way, had closed the shop in Piazza dei Martiri for no reason, and Alfonso was left without a job. As a result, now he too, and successfully, was being retrained, thanks to Leela. I could have found out more, and maybe I would have liked to. All I had to do was call her, stop by. But I never did. Once only I met her on the street and stopped reluctantly. She must have been offended that I had told her the wrong phone number, that I had offered to give lessons to her son and instead had disappeared, that she had done everything to reconcile with me and I had withdrawn. She said she was in a hurry. She asked in dialect, "Are you still living on Via Tasso?" "Yes, it's out of the way. It has a view of the sea." "What's the sea from up there?" "A bit of color. Better if you're closer. That way you notice that there's filth, mud, piss, polluted water. But you, who read and write books, like to tell lies, not the truth." I cut her short. I said, "For now, I'm there." She cut me even shorter. "One can always change. How many times do we say one thing and then do another? Take a place here." I shook my head. I said goodbye. Was that what she wanted? To bring me back to the neighborhood? 37. Then, in my already complicated life, two completely unexpected things happened at the same time. Nino's research institute was invited to New York for some important job, and a tiny publishing house in Boston published my book. Those two events turned into a possible trip to the United States. After endless hesitations, endless discussions, some quarrels, we decided to take that vacation. But I would have to leave Dede and Elsa for 2 weeks. Even under normal conditions, I had a hard time making arrangements. I wrote for some journals. I did translations. I took part in debates in places large and small. I compiled notes for a new book. And to arrange for the children with all that hectic activity was always extremely difficult. In general, I turned to Mirella, a student of Nino's who was very reliable and didn't ask much. But if she wasn't available, I left them with Antonella, a neighbor of around 50, the competent mother of grown children. This time, I tried to get Pietro to take them, But he said it was impossible just then to have them for so long. I examined the situation. I had no relationship with Adele. Maria Rosa had left, and no one knew where she was. My mother was weakened by her elusive illness. Elisa was increasingly hostile. And there didn't seem to be an acceptable solution. It was Pietro who finally said to me, "Ask Lena. She left her son with you for months. She's in your debt." I had a hard time making up my mind. The more superficial part of me imagined that, although she had showed that in spite of her work obligations she was available, she would treat my daughters like fussy, demanding little dolls. She would torment them or leave them to Gennaro. While a more hidden part, which perhaps upset me more than the first, considered her the only person I knew who would devote herself entirely to making them comfortable. It was the urgency of finding a solution that drove me to call her. To my tentative and evasive request, she responded without hesitation, as usual, surprising me. "Your daughters are more than my daughters. Bring them to me whenever you like, and go do your things as long as you want." Even though I had told her that I was going with Nino, she never mentioned him. Not even when, with all kinds of cautions, I brought her the children. And so, in May of 1980, consumed by misgivings and yet excited, I left for the United States. It was an extraordinary experience. I felt again that I had no limits. I was capable of flying over oceans, expanding over the entire world, an exhilarating delirium. Naturally, the 2 weeks were very exhausting and very expensive. The women who had published my book had no money, and even though they were generous, I still spent a lot. As for Nino, he had trouble getting reimbursed even for his airplane ticket. Yet we were happy. I, at least, have never been so happy as in those days. When we got back, I was sure I was pregnant. Already before leaving for America, I had had some suspicions, but I hadn't said anything to Nino. And for the entire vacation, I had savored the possibility in secret, with a heedless pleasure. But when I went to get my daughters, I had no more doubts, and, feeling so literally full of life, I was tempted to confide in Lila. As usual, however, I gave up on the idea. I thought, she'll say something unpleasant. She'll remind me that I claimed I didn't want another child. I was radiant, and Lila, as if my happiness had infected her, greeted me with an air that was no less content. She exclaimed, "How beautiful you look." I gave her the gifts I had brought for her, for Enzo and for Gennaro. I told her in detail about the cities I had seen, the encounters I'd had. "From the plane," I said, "I saw a piece of the Atlantic Ocean through a hole in the clouds. The people are very friendly. They're not reserved the way they are in Germany, or arrogant as in France. Even if you speak English badly, they listen to you with attention and make an effort to understand. In the restaurants, everybody shouts, more than in Naples. If you compare the skyscraper on Corso Nevada with the ones in Boston or New York, you realize it's not a skyscraper. The streets are numbered. They don't have the names of people everyone's forgotten by now." I never mentioned Nino. I didn't say anything about him and his work. I acted as if I had gone by myself. She listened attentively. She asked questions I wasn't able to answer. And then she praised my daughters sincerely. She said she had got on very well with them. I was pleased. And again, I was on the point of telling her that I was expecting a child. But Lila didn't give me time. She whispered seriously, "Lucky you're back, Lenu. I've just had some good news, and it makes me happy to tell you first of all." She, too, was pregnant.
38. Leela had dedicated herself to the children, body and soul, and it could not have been easy to wake them in time in the morning, get them washed and dressed, give them a solid but quick breakfast, take them to school in the Via Tasso neighborhood amid the morning chaos of the city, pick them up punctually in that same turmoil, bring them back to the neighborhood, feed them, supervise their homework, and keep up with her job, her domestic tasks. But when I questioned Dede and Elsa closely, it became clear that she had managed very well. And now, for them, I was a more inadequate mother than ever. I didn't know how to make pasta with tomato sauce the way Aunt Lena did. I didn't know how to dry their hair and comb it with the skill and gentleness she had. I didn't know how to perform any task that Aunt Lena didn't approach with a superior sensitivity. Except, maybe, singing certain songs that they loved and that she had admitted she didn't know. To this, it should be added that, especially in Dede's eyes, that marvelous woman whom I didn't visit often enough, "Mama, why don't we go see Aunt Lena? Why don't you let us sleep at her house more? Don't you have to go away anymore?" had a specific quality that made her unequaled. She was the mother of Gennaro, whom my older daughter usually called Reno, and who seemed to her the most wonderful person of the male sex in the world. At the moment, I was hurt. My relations with the children were not wonderful, and their idealization of Leela made things worse. Once, at yet another criticism of me, I lost my patience. I yelled, "Okay, go to the market of mothers and buy another one." That market was a game of ours that generally served to alleviate conflicts and reconcile us. I would say, "Sell me at the market of mothers if I'm no good for you." And they would answer, "No, Mama, we don't want to sell you. We like you the way you are." On that occasion, however, maybe because of my harsh tone, Dede answered, "Yes, let's go right now. We can sell you and buy Aunt Lena." That was the atmosphere for a while, and certainly it wasn't the best one for telling the children that I had lied to them. My emotional state was complicated, shameless, shy, happy, anxious, innocent, guilty. And I didn't know where to begin. The conversation was difficult. "Children, I thought I didn't want another child, but I did, and in fact I'm pregnant. You'll have a little brother, or maybe another sister. But the father isn't your father. The father is Nino, who already has a wife and two children, and I don't know how he'll take it." I thought about it again, and put it off. Then out of the blue came a conversation that surprised me. Dede, in front of Elsa, who listened in some alarm, said, in the tone she took when she wanted to explain a problem full of perils, "You know that Aunt Lena sleeps with Enzo, but they're not married?" "Who told you?" "Reno. Enzo isn't his father."
"Reno told you that too?"
"Yes. So I asked Aunt Lena, and she explained to me."
"What did she explain?"
She was tense. She observed me to see if she was making me angry. "Shall I tell you?"
"Yes."
"Aunt Lena has a husband just as you do, and that husband is Reno's father. His name is Stefano Caracci. Then she has Enzo Scano, who sleeps with her. And the exact same thing happens with you. You have Papa, whose name is Airota, but you sleep with Nino, whose name is Saratore."
I smiled to reassure her. "How did you ever learn all those surnames?"
"Aunt Lena talked to us about it. She said that they're stupid. Reno came out of her stomach. He lives with her, but he's called Caracci like his father. We came out of your stomach,
We live much more with you than with Papa, but we're called Airota.
So?
Mama, if someone talks about Aunt Lena's stomach, he doesn't say, this is Stefano Caracci's stomach. He says, this is Lena Cerullo's stomach. The same goes for you. Your stomach is Elena Greco's stomach, not Pietro Airota's.
And what does that mean?
That it would be more correct for Rino to be called Rino Cerullo, and us, Dede and Elsa Greco.
Is that your idea?
No, Aunt Lena's.
What do you think?
I think the same thing.
Yes?
Yes, absolutely.
But Elsa, since the atmosphere seemed favorable, tugged at me and intervened.
It's not true, Mama. She said that when she gets married, she'll be called Dede Caracci.
Dede exclaimed furiously,
Shut up! You're a liar!
I turned to Elsa. Why Dede Caracci?
Because she wants to marry Reno.
I asked Dede, You like Reno?
Yes,
she said in an argumentative tone.
And even if we don't get married, I'll sleep with him just the same.
With Reno?
Yes, like Aunt Lena with Enzo, and also like you with Nino. Can she do that, Mama?
Elsa asked dubiously. I didn't answer. I was evasive. But that exchange improved my mood and initiated a new phase. It didn't take much, in fact, to recognize that with this and other conversations about real and pretend fathers, about old and new last names, Leela had managed to make the living situation into which I had cast Dede and Elsa not only acceptable in their eyes, but even interesting. In fact, almost miraculously, my daughters stopped talking about how they missed Adele and Maria Rosa. They stopped saying, when they returned from Florence, that they wanted to go and stay forever with their father and Doriana. They stopped making trouble for Mirella, the babysitter, as if she were their worst enemy. They stopped rejecting Naples, the school, the teachers, their classmates, and, above all, the fact that Nino slept in my bed. In short, they seemed more serene. And I noted those changes with relief. However vexing it might be that Leela had entered the lives of my daughters, binding them to her, the last thing I could accuse her of was not having given them the utmost affection, the utmost care, assistance in reducing their anxieties. That was the Leela I loved. She could emerge unexpectedly from within her very meanness, surprising me. Suddenly, every offense faded. She's malicious. She always has been. But she's also much more. You have to put up with her. And I acknowledged that she was helping me do less harm to my daughters. One morning, I woke up and thought of her without hostility for the first time in a long while. I remembered when she got married, her first pregnancy. She was 16, only 7 or 8 years older than Dede. My daughter would soon be the age of the ghosts of our girlhood. I found it inconceivable that in a relatively small amount of time, my daughter could wear a wedding dress as Leela had, end up brutalized in a man's bed, lock herself into the role of Signora Caracci. I found it equally inconceivable that, as had happened to me, she could lie under the heavy body of a grown man at night on the Meronti, smeared with dark sand, damp air, and bodily fluids, just for revenge. I remembered the thousands of odious things we had gone through, and I let the solidarity regain force. What a waste it would be, I said to myself, to ruin our story by leaving too much space for ill feelings. Ill feelings are inevitable, but the essential thing is to keep them in check.
I grew close to Leela again, with the excuse that the children liked seeing her. Our pregnancies did the rest. 39. But we were two very different pregnant women. My body reacted with eager acceptance, hers with reluctance. And yet from the beginning, Leela emphasized that she had wanted that pregnancy. She said, laughing, "I planned it." Yet there was something in her body that, as usual, put up resistance. Thus, while I immediately felt as if a sort of rose-colored light flickered inside me, she became greenish. The whites of her eyes turned yellow. She detested certain smells. She threw up continuously. "What should I do?" she said. "I'm happy, but that thing in my belly isn't. It's mad at me." Enzo denied it. He said, "Come on, he's happier than anyone." And according to Leela, who made fun of him, he meant, "I put it in there. Trust me. I saw that it's good, and you mustn't worry." When I ran into Enzo, I felt more liking for him than usual, more admiration. It was as if to his old pride, a new one had been added, which was manifested in a vastly increased desire to work and, at the same time, in a vigilance at home, in the office, on the street, all aimed at defending his companion from physical and metaphysical dangers and anticipating her every desire. He took on the task of giving Stefano the news. He didn't blink. He half grimaced and withdrew. Maybe because by now the old grocery made almost nothing, and the subsidies he got from his ex-wife were essential. Maybe because every connection between him and Leela must have seemed to him a very old story. What did it matter to him if she was pregnant? He had other problems, other desires. But mainly, Enzo took on the job of telling Gennaro. Leela, in fact, had reasons to feel embarrassment with her son that were no different from mine, but certainly more justified, for feeling embarrassed with Dede and Elsa. Gennaro wasn't a child, and childish tones and words couldn't be used with him. He was a boy in the full crisis of puberty who couldn't find an equilibrium. Failed twice in a row in high school, he had become hypersensitive, unable to hold back tears or emerge from his humiliation. He spent days wandering the streets or in his father's grocery, sitting in a corner, picking at the pimples on his broad face, and studying Stefano in every gesture and expression without saying a word. "He'll take it really badly," Leela worried. But meanwhile, she was afraid that someone else would tell him, Stefano, for example. So one evening, Enzo took him aside and told him about the pregnancy. Gennaro was impassive. Enzo urged him, "Go hug your mother. Let her know that you love her." The boy obeyed. But a few days later, Elsa asked me in secret, "Mama, what's a tramp?"
"A beggar."
"You're sure?"
"Yes."
"Reno told Dede that Aunt Leena is a tramp." Problems, in other words. I didn't talk to Leela about it. That seemed pointless. And then I had my own difficulties. I couldn't bring myself to tell Pietro. I couldn't tell the children. Mainly, I couldn't tell Nino. I was sure that when Pietro found out I was pregnant, he would be resentful, even though he now had Doriana, and would turn to his parents, would induce his mother to make trouble for me in every way possible. I was sure that Dede and Elsa would become hostile again. But my real worry was Nino. I hoped that the birth of the child would bind him definitively to me. I hoped that Eleonora, once she found out about that new fatherhood, would leave him. But it was a feeble hope. Usually, fear predominated. Nino had told me clearly. He preferred that double life, even though it caused all sorts of problems, anxieties, tensions, to the trauma of an absolute break with his wife. I was afraid he would ask me to have an abortion. So every day I was on the point of telling him, and every day I said to myself, no, better tomorrow. Instead, everything began to sort itself out. One night I telephoned Pietro and told him, I'm pregnant. There was a long silence. He cleared his throat. He said softly that he expected it. He asked, have you told the children? No. Do you want me to tell them? No. Be careful. All right. That was it. He began to call more often. His tone was affectionate. He was worried about how the girls would react. He offered every time to talk to them about it. But in the end, it was neither of us. It was Leela, who, although she had refused to tell her own son, convinced Dede and Elsa that it would be a wonderful thing to occupy themselves when the time came, with the funny live doll that I had made with Nino and not with their father. They took it well. Since Aunt Lena had called it a doll, they began to use the same word. They were interested in my stomach, and every morning when they woke up, they asked, Mama, how's the doll? Between telling Pietro and telling the girls, I finally confronted Nino. It went like this. One afternoon, when I felt especially anxious, I went to see Leela to complain and asked her, what if he wants me to have an abortion? Well, she said, then everything becomes perfectly clear. What's clear? That his wife and children come first, then you. Direct. Brutal. Leela hid many things from me, but not her aversion to my union. I wasn't sorry. In fact, I knew that it did me good to speak explicitly. In the end, she had said what I didn't dare say to myself, that Nino's reaction would provide proof of the solidity of our bond. I muttered something like, it's possible. We'll see. When, soon afterward, Carmen arrived with her children, and Leela drew her too into the conversation, the afternoon became like afternoons of our adolescence. We confided in each other. We plotted. We planned. Carmen got mad. She said that if Nino was opposed, she was ready to go and speak to him in person. And she added, I don't understand how it's possible, Lainu, that a person at your level can let someone walk all over you. I tried to justify myself and to justify my companion. I said that his in-laws had helped and were helping him, that everything Nino and I could afford was possible only because, thanks to his wife's family, he had a good income. I admitted that, with what I got from my books and from Pietro, the girls and I would have a hard time scraping by in a respectable way. And I added, don't get the wrong idea, though. Nino is very affectionate. He sleeps at my house at least 4 times a week. He has always avoided humiliating me in any way. When he can, he takes care of Dede and Elsa as if they were his. But as soon as I stopped speaking, Leela almost ordered me, then tell him tonight. I obeyed. I went home, and when he arrived, we had dinner. I put the children to bed, and finally, I told him that I was pregnant. There was a very long moment. Then he hugged me, kissed me. He was very happy. I whispered with relief, I've known for a while, but I was afraid you would be angry. He reproached me and said something that amazed me. We have to go with Dede and Elsa to my parents and give them this good news too. My mother will be pleased. He wanted in that way to sanction our union. He wanted to make his new paternity official. I gave a half-hearted sign of agreement. Then I said, but you'll tell Eleonora? It's none of her business.
You're still her husband.
It's pure form.
You'll have to give your name to our child.
I'll do it.
I became agitated.